Hi, everyone. It's me, Lindsay Pinchuk, host of Dear Found Her. On today's episode, you'll hear founder Catherine Hamm talk all about how she used and still uses strategic partnerships to build and grow her business, Barrabee. And if you've been around here for a while, you know that partnerships are the foundation of any marketing plan that I build, including my own, which is why I put all of my partnership strategies together into an easy-to-access and digest ebook. The Partnership Blueprint for Small Business is your step-by-step guide to putting your brand in front of thousands of new customers. You'll find 8 strategies for partnership marketing execution. Strategies include creating collaborative content, hosting an Instagram Live, Instagram takeovers, creating a UGC program, holding a virtual talk or a webinar, an email swap, creating a giveaway, and more. Included for each one is a description of the opportunity and what's needed for success, step-by-step instructions for execution, templates and swipe files for outreach, both over email and direct message, and best practices. This guide is for you if you're looking to build meaningful and ongoing relationships with partners within your niche, find new customers, increase your brand awareness among the right customers, and grow the community surrounding your brand, something we also talk about at great length in today's episode. You can grab a copy of your own through the link in my show notes. Make sure that you tag me in your partnerships because I want to see what you're up to in real life. And now on to today's show. Today's story came out of founder Catherine Hamm's need to get more sleep. Sounds like a familiar problem, doesn't it? You'll have to listen to hear how she solved it. Catherine Hamm is the founder and CEO of Barrabee. Before founding Barrabee, she was previously an economist with the World Bank, where she was chronically tired and never slept before starting the brand with her own retirement savings. Today, Barrabee is a booming wellness business with over 8 figures in direct-to-consumer revenue, a range of cult-favorite innovations with more than 10 patents, as well as fruitful retail partnerships with the likes of Nordstrom, Crate & Barrel, and Sage & Sound, not to mention a growing, well-rested team across 3 continents and an entirely plastic-free supply chain. Whoa. In just a few years, Catherine has created one of the most beloved brands in home wellness with a range of cult-favorite functional products for a calmer, more collected world. Barrabee exists at the intersection of wellness and home with an uncompromising approach to true sustainability from loom to lap. The company holds 10 patents, like I said, and owns a plastic-free supply chain in its entirety. In recent years, Barrabee has evolved beyond weighted blankets to introduce additional sustainable wellness products into the home. Please come on in and meet Catherine Hamm. Dear Founder, I'm your host, Lindsay Pinchuk. At 30 years old, I founded my first company with just $500, building it to reach 3 million people and generate 7 figures in revenue for 6 years straight, all before I sold it. A decade later, I exited with one goal: to support other women in business through their own entrepreneurship journeys. As an entrepreneur, you wear every hat. You burn the midnight oil, and most of all, you pour your heart and soul into everything you do. But there's no blueprint for success. Every week on Dear Founder, you'll get to sit in as I pick the brain of some of my closest female founder contacts. Save yourself time, money, and hassle listening to the lessons of those who have already done it. You'll also have the chance to hear about my own founder journey, how I built my first company, and now how I'm building my second, as I share solo episodes filled with actionable lessons and steps that you can apply to your business immediately. Make sure to subscribe now so that we can build our businesses together each and every week. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Founder. I'm really excited about today's guest. We haven't had a DTC product founder on for quite some time, and her story is remarkable. So Catherine Hamm is here today. She is the founder and CEO of Barrabee. Welcome. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
And I cannot wait for you to share your story. So I'd love for you to start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you started Barrabee and what is Barrabee.
Sure. So I'm Catherine, and I grew up in Germany originally. And I was always passionate about development and traveling, and studied. I first did after college. So I graduated in Germany. And then after college, I started volunteering for a college in Afghanistan that brought education, long distance education, to women. So, and I did that for some time and then also traveled to Kabul. And I realized I really loved doing that work, but it was like a small NGO. We didn't have a lot of funds. So at the end, our impact was limited. And I was thinking, how can I create more impact? And one thing that I was looking at is that point, if I work at one of these international organizations like the World Bank and really get into development work, that was one of my dreams. So I went to Colombia and studied master's in public administration with a focus on economic development, and then started at the World Bank as an economist. So that was my first job starting out in Washington. And from there, really, the adventure began. And I was traveling all across the world and within like a very short time frame, moved to three different continents. So I had just moved to India. And from there, I was like traveling to my focus at that point was to bring help small and medium sized businesses, and a lot of them were women founded businesses, to get finance from banks. I mean, we all know how difficult it is as women founders to get loans or to get access to finance. I mean, imagine like a woman in India or Bangladesh, for her to get finance, it's almost impossible. So I was traveling on the road, sometimes, you know, 5 hours to go to one location, 5 hours back. And I loved my job, but it really impacted my sleep. So I would lay awake at night, couldn't fall asleep, I would wake up multiple times at night, and then really would in the morning, just like it felt I hadn't slept at all. And it started to impact me. And after a couple of months, after having moved to India, I was diagnosed with chronic insomnia. And we tried a lot of different things. And on a personal level, I was researching a lot of different products, things that could help me sleep better. And I mean, I started changing out my mattress, my pillows, white noise machines, you name it. I tried all the products. But as part of my research, I came along the concept of a weighted blanket. And it had been around for more than 30 years. But in that article that I read, it showed like that, I mean, it was at that point a product for children, right? In people, children who have sensory disorders. But in the end of the article, they mentioned that the same product, if you put an evenly distributed weight on the body, it can also help people sleep better. So I was like, at this stage, I have nothing to lose. I tried everything. So I ordered from a German pharmacy this orange bean bag that took 6 weeks to ship. So until I got it and I was sitting in front of that like plastic filled bean bag, I didn't even want to try it. But I'm like, okay, let's just put it on. And I tried it on a Saturday afternoon. I put it on and I just passed out. I literally just napped for 4 hours straight. And I was like, holy cow, this is like amazing. So problem solved. I'm able to sleep. And then at night, I just put the bean bag on top of my sheets. But then just like after a week or so, I kind of continued waking up because I got really hot. I mean, if you sleep under 20 pounds of plastic beads, it's just impossible to sleep for 8 hours. And then I continued researching again. And I'm like, there must be something like that's heavy, but at the same time, it doesn't make me hot. And I think by researching, I realized that even though the product has been around for more than 30 years, no one had invented anything on the design. Any updates, any innovation, there was just nothing. And I was just looking from a consumer perspective at that point, because I had a good job. I was an economist at the World Bank. So why would I quit and be crazy and start my own business? But I kind of got fascinated with the idea and, you know, while moving along and thinking like, I think there is something to it. And I was really, really passionate about the product. So I asked my boss, if I could take some time off. And she was really encouraging. So she said, why don't you take a year off, see if you can get the business off the ground. You know, if it doesn't work, we make a great case study for the World Bank out of it, and you're back in no time. So far, I haven't been back. So I think that's good news. But I started with a Kickstarter campaign, with a crowdfunding. So I really like planned it out as a business plan, and really also with in the perspective in mind that I could be back in a year, that it just wouldn't work. But I wanted to really give it a real shot And also I didn't want to question along the way. I was like, okay, I give this a full year. I won't like after 2 months or 3 months say, well, maybe this doesn't feel right. I'm like, I give it really a full focus and dedication. And yeah, I think after 6 weeks of the crowdfunding campaign, we had already collected more than $250,000. And there was such an enthusiasm about the product that I realized there's really something special and more to it. And from there, I just moved through the motion of creating the product. But basically, that was the start of it, the crowdfunding campaign and these initial $250,000 that started it all.
So before we go back and dissect how you got the business off the ground, talk about, I'd love for you to share with us, what is Barabee now and where are you guys today?
Mm-hmm. So Barabee is now a D2C company. We've been growing rapidly. Like when I launched in December 2018, it was just me and two knitters in a small garage. And now we have more than 30 employees and we've just been listed as one of the fastest growing companies in America by Inc. magazine. And you can find our products now and also retailers. We sell at Nordstrom, Western, Pottery Barn, and have, besides the weighted blanket, also build out additional products around it. But really, being a sleep-centered brand, I'm just very passionate about helping people sleep naturally the way that I discovered the weighted blanket 7 years ago.
So I love your story because, like so many female founders, you started a company out of necessity. And that is very common amongst many of the guests I have here and many of the women that I talk to regularly. Now, you obviously are very smart. You went to a very good college. You had a very good job when you first graduated. And I mean, you were an economist at the World Bank. But what did you really know about creating a product? And I think that right? And that is something that it's like, that takes on a whole new set of learnings. So you have this $250,000 from the Kickstarter. How did you know what to do next? And what did you do next?
I mean, to answer your question, I knew nothing, right? I learned everything from scratch and I made a ton of mistakes, very costly mistakes. I mean, even with the Kickstarter campaign, that was my first hiccup when I gave $30,000 to someone who wanted to create video and marketing materials. And I basically shipped my first and only prototype to them. And after like knocking on their door, like 6 weeks later, I'm like, hey, how's the video coming along? I really want to launch now. They're like, oh, we need a bit more time. And I got like this horrible video back with the blanket with like mustard stains on it, on a red leather couch. It was just the worst video ever. And it was the first moment where I'm like, okay, I'm just not cut out of it because who am I? I didn't know marketing, right? I was an economist. That was the first moment when I was just like, I should go back. And then I decided to enroll like another company with a much smaller budget to do a more scrappy video. But yeah, I had to like, I think for everything that I did in the first phase, like marketing, logistics, I made definitely like a mistake. Then I learned, I started talking to people who were in the space. I think that was like one of the biggest lessons instead of me kind of reaching out blindly to like people who are just enlisting their services on Google, like talking to other founders who are like 6 months, 12 months ahead of me, say, how did you do that video? How did you do your marketing campaign? And then really getting these initial referrals, warm referrals, where people who have already worked with someone. And I think I learned that the hard way to just, you know, even on LinkedIn, reaching out cold to someone, a founder. And I think you will be surprised how willing people are in the female founder community, on the founder community to lend a helping hand and say like, well, we use this service. This is like my 2 cents of advice on how to get there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really like a lot of Googling, a lot of reaching out to people, building that network all early on, because again, as a first time founder and someone who wasn't in that field before, I didn't have a lot of contact. So for someone to start thinking about the business, like think about like, who do you know and who you can reach out to and build like that network early. And before I even start a project now, I mean, we're thinking about Europe right now. And so instead of me setting up Europe, We're having like a process in place where we just talk a lot of people in our network who've done it, who succeeded, who failed, and see what lessons they learned to see what we can do better before we just like stumble and fumble into something.
I couldn't agree with you more. I always say that female founders are the greatest group to tap into because we've all been there, right? Like I have a client right now who's launching an apparel brand and we're doing a photo shoot and they were like, well, how are we going to get the models? And I said, we're going to ask other female founders who are in your demographic because everyone is just willing to help. And you know, and I'm glad that you shared that. I think that that's a really important piece to share. But when was it that you were like, I have like, this is something? Like, how did you know, you know, you're getting things off the ground, you have a Kickstarter, you have a product, like, when were you like, okay, like, I'm not going to go back to the World Bank?
I think the first point was like, I launched in December, and we had 800 blankets that we handmade in our small facility. And they sold out within just a couple of weeks. And then we had a huge wait list of people wanting the product, asking for it. And the feedback we also got, people loved it. People gave reviews. People sent like emails in how much the product has changed their lives. People said, I hadn't slept for years. And since like two or three nights is the first time I'm sleeping through the night. So I knew we had a really good product that solved the need. But then I think the second validation was also when retailers reached out. So I think we were just 5 months in and I had an email in my inbox from West Elm said, we want to try your blankets. And I'm like, is that a scam? How did they even find about us? And they're like, we want to come to your showroom. I'm like, well, we don't have a showroom. And said, can we come to your place instead? And they're like, sure, you can come. They're Brooklyn based. And then they said, like, we take like three blankets of this, five in this colors, four in this, like total of like 300 pounds that they selected on blankets. So our small team, we just put them on a small like hotel trolley that we had captured across the street and we wheeled these blankets into West Ham. But they loved them and they ordered for the first time. And I think that was the moment with the positive customer feedback, retailers being excited and wanted to take on a really small brand that had just launched, that we are onto something and that I probably would be going back anytime soon.
When you initially sold out, do you think were a lot of the customers from like the Kickstarter and the word of mouth from the Kickstarter?
We definitely had our Kickstarter community that kept supporting us. So having that initial community and in our back, that was very helpful. But then also we had gifted product to editors. So we got a couple of articles also coming out that wrote about us. And I think then you get into this list where people are looking already for weighted blankets. And then suddenly you have a weighted blanket in the market that is just made of organic cotton, no plastic beads, that looks pretty. So we were hitting all the points also in the community where people already had weighted blankets that then upgraded to our product quite quickly.
And you did something that I think is very smart. You said you had a wait list, and I always encourage my clients to get a wait list and to generate a wait list because that's how you create demand. So how did you leverage that wait list for further growth?
So, I mean, the wait list, we obviously have sent them emails. So I think it's important to keep people in the loop. So when you sign up, you get an email where we kind of also explain why are you even waiting? Because that's like people are impatient. People want to have the product right away. Explaining we're a small business. The product is handmade. Or we say we're knitting as fast as we can. So that builds a lot of like sympathy where people are like, okay, I can wait because it's a handmade product. And then from there, like whenever we also have like something special around the brand, that these are the people who always get to know that first. So people who follow us in the community. We just, for example, for April Fool's created a very big 50-pound bear as an April Fool's joke. And so these would be always the first to know when there's a new product launch or there's something special. So keeping them in the know, keeping them also excited about who's behind the brand and telling our story I think that has been really instrumental for us on building that community and having people excited about new products that we're launching, so that we actually like sell out on the new launches too, because people are excited. They know what's coming. The first one to get access to usually a small batch that we're producing when we launch something new.
Hi guys, it's Lindsay Pinchuk, host of Dear Founder. As entrepreneurs, you wear so many hats, don't you? Sometimes it's hard to know how and when and who to hire for help. But I want to say, finding Hivecast to produce my podcast has been a godsend. They've been producing Dear Founder since season one, and honestly, I'm not sure what I'd do without them. Each week, I give them everything that they need to create the episodes that you hear. And not only do they produce and put out the episode, but they create all the awesome marketing materials that you see to promote it. They save me so much time, and honestly, their rates don't break the bank. What I love about them is that they make podcasting accessible to any small business owner who wants to create a podcast. I know that many of you have reached out to them already, but I just want to say, if you're thinking about a podcast of your own, reach out to the Hivecast team. I promise they will make it seamless from the start. You can find them through the link in the show notes. And now back to the episode. People who have been around here, who have been around here for a long time and who are listening, would probably think that I'm paying you to say this, because anyone who knows me knows that I push community first and foremost over everything. And that when you have a community, a viable community that surrounds your brand, they are your biggest champions. And they're the ones who help your business to grow exponentially, even if it's a little slow at the start. Like, but taking the time to actually cultivate that community, just as you just said, is so imperative. And I know just from the few short minutes that we've talked about this, I can tell that you also, in addition to leveraging the waitlist in that community, that you were very smart in terms of leveraging the user-generated content that you were getting from your community once they had the product. And so to me, it feels like a very natural turn of events that kind of just set things in motion for growth, because you were leveraging with every step, you have leveraged what you already have created. And so I would love for you to talk a little bit about that user generated content and community off the wait list, and how you've continued to use that to market and grow and build your business exponentially. Because I want to say, for those of you who didn't hear in the top or didn't read the show notes, Barabee is an 8-figure business, and this is, you know, this was started from nothing. It's really remarkable.
Thank you. No, definitely community. I couldn't agree more. It's our most important asset. And outside of like our email list, there's definitely social media, where people just like naturally like share content, when they receive the unboxing experience. So we make sure that we ship everything plastic free, and our people who buy Barabee are usually also very focused on sustainability. So that unboxing experience is something that we reshare, and we would create content around it where we also engage with people offline. So for example, out of our packaging, we have these upcycling workshops where we just rented spaces like, you know, in Brooklyn, like small areas where we put small machine, like not knitting machines, sewing machines. And then we have content creators who come and we, for example, create a baguette bag or a tote bag out of our materials. So upcycling was a big one where we create like these offline communities where we engage with people. Now we've actually taken it to the next level where we partner with different wellness studios. So we just have something coming up in May with Remedy Place, which is a social wellness hub. And we have a partnership with different studios in New York and LA, where people going through sound bath classes, breath work, and we would provide the weighted blankets and our weighted eye mask for people to try out. So, and then obviously our community would be the first one to know where like there are like activations and events where they can experience the brand offline in a different like way, where they learn something, where it's like, again, about nervous system regulation, stress regulation, and kind of extending our brand pillar along that way. Another thing was the partnerships that we're doing. I think for people to be excited is you cannot have like a gray blanket. It's like, okay, we have another gray blanket, another one. We really went very creative, for example, and during COVID when everything was closed down, we partnered with a popsicle company and we had popsicle inspired weighted blankets in mango siesta, strawberry fruits. And we would send people like these beautiful, like ombre styled blankets with like matching popsicles, like a set to their homes where people couldn't go out in the summer. Everyone was stuck in their homes and just kind of creating these moments of delights and like knowing where people are at right now and getting them at like at where they're at right now. And that was like such a moment where we just got a lot of content around it. I think another one is humor. Usually like mental health and weighted blankets, it's, you always see like these mental illness gray weighted blankets. And we really lean into kind of humor and having a conversation. So we're always big on April Fools, what I already mentioned about it, like creating a hedgehog blanket for April Fools and working with all these little hedgehog influencers to engage, like to create that content. And I think like having these moments that feel very authentic to who our customers are, but then like having them in different ways, like bringing something where people feel like seen and heard, but at the same time, it's engaging and entertaining. So you want to keep following the brand instead of like, you know, another gray blanket that you've already seen 100,000 times.
I'm fascinated with this. And I think the other big question I have is obviously, and correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I'm wrong, but my gut is telling me that when you got the order at West Elm, you really had to change your manufacturing process.
We did.
And that's like kind of the elephant in the room right now, because I haven't asked you that yet. Like, how did you go from your two knitters to a place where you were able to fulfill these orders? You still work with West Elm, so I'm guessing it was a very successful, fruitful relationship. So what happened?
So we had, I mean, I didn't mention we had a really interesting start because the product was new in the market and I had spoken to more than 50 manufacturers and I got like 50 no's where people were just saying, I haven't seen something like this. We do bedding, we do light blankets, or even in the apparel space where they use the fabric, but they don't have the machines to make it. So we had to create a manufacturing process on our own. With the machines in the small knitters. The advantage we had, it was very like cumbersome to set up the manufacturing and it took me quite a while. But then I was very familiar with the processes, right? I knew how to make a blanket. We had all the equipment to do it. So the step to then actually go to a bigger manufacturer and say, look, this is the unit. This is like how it works. These are all the manuals and how to create our product was much easier. I mean, it still took a couple of months to find like the right supplier, like that have all the certifications that West Elm would require, the organic certifications that we would require, and then teach them from scratch. So we had like a small unit they had to set up for us where we brought in all the machines, had to order more machines at that point. And us going in again into India and like teaching people how to knit took us probably another 6 months to set that up. But given that we knew the process because we didn't use a third-party manufacturer, but we were the manufacturer, we had all the knowledge in-house, the second process was actually much easier than the first one in setting it up from scratch.
Did you have to raise money again?
We raised money, but much later on. So we raised money from a VC in 2022 after we had already reached 8 figures. So it was at a time when we could determine our terms better and also retain more control at that stage versus raising money earlier where you have to give up more control and equity along the way.
So you said something, you've said it a couple of times just about how you're not just obviously a normal blanket and there is a lot of education that obviously comes around your products because it's not just a blanket company anymore. So obviously we've talked about community right now. We've talked about community already and leveraging your community and user generated content, and you talked a little bit about the partnerships in New York and LA, but there obviously are other avenues that you've had to explore in terms of education surrounding your brand and making sure that people understand why you are different and what the problem is that you solve. So how do you feather that educational process into your communication so that your customer and new customers understand the benefits of what it is you're offering?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the first touch point would obviously be the website where we have like certain sections on the product page, but also like dedicated sections just that goes about product education. Because again, it's not a sock or a shoe where I have to, like, everyone knows how to use socks and shoes, but we have to start from scratch and kind of why should you actually sleep underweight. So we provide all the scientific research on that side with links on like studies that have been done on the product, how it impacts sleep, how it impacts anxiety. And then we also have a quiz on the website, because the most important part is that how heavy should the blanket be? And the guideline is 10% of your body weight, but there are also other factors. If you suffer from anxiety, if you wake up multiple times at night, you probably want to bump that up a bit and go like one category higher, and just kind of having the customer like having a quiz. And then obviously also on the customer support side. So we have a dedicated in-house team of customer service agents that are also educated around the product. So if you come to our website, you would be able to chat with someone and basically been taken through all the steps on how to choose a product, which fabrication is right for you. We have organic cotton, we have Tencel. So there are different things that people can choose. So I want to make sure people are well taken care of in that process on the website. And then obviously also offline, we partnered with like different organizations, NAMI, different sleep scientists, where we have like different educational sessions or like events that we like, where we invite people, where we educate them about the product, where they can experience the product and then talk to someone about sleep or how to use the product. Different pop-ups where we always would invite a sleep scientist, where people can chat to someone. That's been really helpful. And it's just part of what we want to do as a business that is sleep focused with a product that probably not everyone has used before.
How much is your business? How much of your business is D2C versus retail?
The majority of our business is still D2C, like more than 70%.
And how did you decide? Obviously, West Elm was probably a no-brainer. That was a big break for you. But how do you decide which retailers to partner with? And, you know, that's a whole different way of doing business, to go into retail and have wholesale product and whatnot. And, you know, we all know that, you know, your margins on D2C are much higher and it's more fruitful for you as a company, but it's hard to pass up that opportunity, right? When you're going to be in 1,000 doors, and that's essentially marketing as well. So how do you balance that?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, given that we are an organic product, it just limited us from the get-go. It's like we had a higher price point. So finding like retailers that are aligned with us. So, I mean, at the moment you can find us in like this Williams-Sonoma, like Pottery Barn, West Elm. So that was a no brainer. Then we had Nordstrom. And I think one criteria when selecting them is the education that people can get on the ground. Like some people have like external like sales reps. Some of the retailers have like their own staff, where usually you walk into a store and you just know there are people who are educated about all products that are in the home goods section. So that was one criteria. If someone walks in and we send out D2C customers, say, if you want to try out a blanket, go to the next Nordstrom. I want to know that people like they can get the questions answered actually, and they get, you know, right product education also in that customer touch point. And with all the retailers that we picked, we knew that this would happen and the product would have a dedicated space. We would have the right signage that explains the weighted blankets and trained customer service. And obviously, like, yeah, we are in the more premium outlets like Saks. We're also launching in Bloomingdale's in May and Crate and Barrel.
And do you find that the retail experience does help to lead to further experience on your website? I mean, obviously a retailer has limited selection versus what they can get from you online.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of, I mean, we track like post-purchase flows where we see, where did you hear about us? And we can clearly see that people like try out a product in a Nordstrom store, but then they want another color, they want another weight, and they come to our website, but they first heard about us at the retailer.
So one of the things that you mentioned in the very beginning of this conversation were all the mistakes that you've made. And, you know, I thank you for saying that, because I think a lot of founders and a lot of women don't like to admit to making mistakes, but that's how we learn. That's how we all learn. It's not just how you learn and how you've developed your business. It's how everyone who's listening can learn as well. So you touched upon a couple of them, but I'd love for you to share like two or three big mistakes that you made and what you learned from them.
Let me think, like, what's the biggest mistake? Things that people can also replicate. I think, like now looking back, we've been like a very long time on D2C, and I've actually been very selective and not expanding to Amazon and other touch points further. I think now looking back, we could have done that like probably 2 years earlier, just diversifying the channels, and getting that read on the customer. Obviously, you don't want to go too early into Amazon. You want to get a good understanding on how's the product working? Are people happy? Will you get good reviews on Amazon? But I think building that presence on Amazon is definitely something you don't want to miss out on. We also created patents for the product. And that was also something where some people said it's very expensive, especially given that I was bootstrapped. I didn't have a lot of money. So we had lawyers who said, don't invest into patents. You know, it's too much money. Maybe you don't get it and just don't do it. But I actually like very economically was still able to put a patent application in that now turned into like a 15 patent portfolio and counting, where we're able to defend the patent and remove these copycats. You know, like the first 18 months, it's you're the only product and like there's no knitted blanket like this. And then suddenly you have like other copycats that are coming in on Amazon. And that I think was a really good decision to keep investing on these patents, because now I think it really protects the bottom line to be able to, you know, take these copycats out of the market. So I think that was definitely something I would hopefully do again if I would start a business. I also would recommend to anyone, if you have a new product idea and you're not sure is can I get a patent for it, you can file a non-provisional patent within 18 months. That's really expensive. It's just a couple thousand dollars and gives you 18 months of runway to decide if there's like an opportunity for you before you then have to invest more money to convert it into full-on fledged patent. But while you're unsure and you don't have a lot of funds, this is always an option that you can take while you explore product market fit and the other factors around it.
Catherine, I want to wrap up with the last question I ask everyone, and that is, what are three actionable tips that you would tell another female founder who's just getting started?
I think the first one would be get started. I mean, I was in my mid-30s and people thought I'm crazy to like quit a solid job and then start selling blankets on the internet. I think it's never too late to start. And especially if you're passionate about something, give it a year. Don't look back. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, you will have a great learning experience. If it works out, it's even better. But you will learn a lot along the way. The second one is the network. It's never too early to build a network of like-minded people. So people who are in the same stage of business funding or founding. So you can vent to them. These are the people you can like, you know, they're just one WhatsApp away to talk about the problems that you have on a day to day. Then get a mentor or two mentors who are like 18 months, two years ahead of you. People who've done it already, who you can say like, which accountant did you use? Which warehouse did you use? When you went into that retailer, how were the discussions going along? But then even like already giving back in the early stages. So I love connecting with like people who have, smaller businesses who are just getting started. It's great to give back, but at the same time, like that scrappy mindset that you have in the first 6 to 12 months, it sometimes we lose along the way because now we're bigger and we have more funds. But then like when I talk to them, and I mean, I was just connecting to someone and she's just started her company like 18 months ago and have found very creative ways on how she works with like executive assistants on a freelance basis and how she finds content creators and because she has a beautiful social media feed and does it very inexpensively. And I connected our team with her and said, look, this is a way that maybe we forgot doing because we have more funds now, but it's actually much better how she's doing it. So I think they're at every stage and how people are where they're at right now, you can connect. And it's just a beautiful like network that you can create to surround yourself while you're building a business, because the journey can be quite lonely. So having friends and like supporters along the way makes it worthwhile.
Catherine Hamm, founder and CEO of Barabee, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story. I am so excited to continue to watch your journey. Really, what you've built is remarkable, and you should be so proud of yourself.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Of course. In case you missed it, we close out every single episode with our number one takeaway from today's conversation. Well, my takeaway from Catherine is really to lean on the power of your community. You've heard me say this before. I always say your community is your number one asset. But hearing Catherine's case study about doing this from the start really shows how a product-based business can leverage user-generated content and that of their community for growth. When you have a committed community, you can ask them to help promote your products, to tag you on social media posts, and so much more. So don't count your community out. They are your most powerful word-of-mouth marketers. I want to thank Catherine so much for joining us today. This conversation was incredible. We've been getting so much love for season 3. You've all been so gracious with your time, leaving us some amazing reviews and 5-star ratings. If you liked today's conversation, I would love it if you left a 5-star rating and review so that others can find us. All you have to do is go to ratethispodcast.com/dearfounder or click the link in the show notes to leave a review wherever it is that you podcast. And if you know someone who we should meet, send them our Meet a Founder link, which is also in our show notes. We'll introduce them to our community on our social media and website later this year. But for now, thank you for listening and thank you for being here. Have a great week, and we will see you on Thursday.